following podcast has adult themes and some strong language.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of season 2 of my podcast, Excuse the Jess. This week I am going to talk about happiness. Now I'm not an expert, I know little about it. As a concept, it's a lovely idea, just be happy. Unfortunately, the reality doesn't quite match it. The American writer Agnes Replier said, "It's not easy to find happiness in ourselves, and it is not possible to find it elsewhere." I know, you thought I was going to start with the Thomas Jefferson one. Nope. So if no one can make us happy, where do you start to find it within yourself? I don't have the answer, so shall we just crack on? Ernest Hemingway said, "Happiness in intelligent people is the rarest thing I know." I really should be one of the happiest people around. Em's finally texted me on Sunday. A week and a day since she ripped into me for being utterly selfish by going to London without telling her. Her text said, "Not talking? Still in London?" That was it. After making me feel like I was the most selfish person on the planet because I couldn't meet up with her and almost ruined a pretty amazing day, it looked like I was at fault again. I text back, "You can't speak to me like that." She immediately replied, "I didn't speak, it was a text." An attempt at humour which usually brings me around. Not today, not with everything that was happening. I copied and pasted my last text, "You can't speak to me like that," and hit send. She was replying, "I wasn't going to let this one go. It wasn't so much that I needed an apology from her now. I just wanted to know why she felt it was okay to speak to me like that. What was it about me that ignites that kind of vitriol in people?" Suddenly, the three dots disappeared from the screen. A reply was imminent, and so I waited. Nothing came. I refreshed the phone to see if it hadn't come through. There was no text. She had obviously changed her mind, which was a shame because I desperately wanted to talk to her. I was dreading work the next day. I felt like Doctor Strange in Infinity War, going through millions of scenarios, except in his case, he came up with one that worked. There wasn't one where I could come out well. At best, people were going to lose their jobs, and at worst, a man from America was going to wheel me across the conference room table and into a brick wall. The anxiety from the anxiety dream I'd had the day before was getting worse. I guess that's why they call them anxiety dreams. I kept trying to put it in perspective. The business was already in trouble, so stealing from it was utterly selfish. Plus, the Cardiff side had gone. People had already lost their jobs. Maybe if they'd been caught out before, then the company wouldn't have to have been sold. The Cardiff office wouldn't have shut, and I wouldn't have ended up in a place which was miles out of nowhere, where everybody hated me, and I wouldn't have been put in this completely shitty situation. I mean, seriously, the business had been sold and not one person had picked it up. Those were my indignant moments. The other moments were about the crushing reality of how bad it was going to be. Ems and Izzy have told me I'm unreadable at times. If things are going particularly badly, or if I've been insulted, my face doesn't betray my feelings. Whatever it is seems to bounce off me. It was something I worked on at an early age, so my stepfather never knew how much his insults upset me. It held me in good stead in life. Of course, it really pisses off people trying to insult me. I had to get it straight in my head, though. I wasn't doing this because they hated me. I was doing this because it couldn't continue. I really wish, though, I'd just found another job and left them to it. It's not like doing this will change my life. Without the benefit of Ems to talk to, I had an imaginary conversation with her instead. I reminded myself of what she always told me, which was, I shouldn't worry because I always did the right thing. Which was why I knew, without a doubt, it would be me going back to Ems to sort things out with her. That really pissed me off too. Oscar Wilde said, "Some cause happiness wherever they go, others whenever they go. I'm definitely the latter lately. I had a sleepless night. I can't say that was unusual, but this time I got up at 5:30 a.m. No writing. That had taken a back burner too. I just started my morning routine on autopilot. Not strictly true. I knew no amount of makeup was going to hide the bags under my eyes. Kept going until I was drinking coffee downstairs at 6:30 a.m. with no chance of being able to stomach breakfast. I kept running it over and over in my head. What would happen if I didn't show up? What would happen if I phoned in sick? These were as much fantasies as me getting six numbers on the Euro Millions. I always had the notion, though, that the fastest way to get past a situation was through it. So I was going to work. At least I knew the international director coming in today was not Robert Downey Jr., as in my anxiety dream. If it were, I'd want to have words with him about his Welsh accent in Dr. Dolittle. It's not like I never wanted to meet RDJ. It's just the fact I found him hot just added to the humiliation in the dream. He hated me. He wanted to kill me, which is mean, especially when you're known for being a superhero. Having that thought made me smile a little, though, so it became a mantra to distract me. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. In the car on the way there, at least he's not Robert Downey Jr. Opening up the building, at least he's not Robert Downey Jr. Getting in the office, at least he's not Robert Downey Jr. My office is an L shape in terms of desks. I face the door and my desk is towards the back wall, while Numbers Guys is towards the right wall as you walk in. The rest of the room has shelving. It means that I am in sight when the door opens, and it's rude of me not to look up. When Numbers Guy entered the door to our office, he looked at me strangely. He said hello and sat at his desk. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. Although in that case, I wish he were. Then came in the operations manager, the big OM, who kind of half said hello and then chatted to Number Guy about their weekend. Numbers Guy had bagged tickets for some rugby game, and so the OM was all over him. A text came through on the work phone from the guy that's not Robert Downey Jr., and his ETA was 10 minutes. I felt the bile in my throat, so I leapt up and out of the office. As I went, I heard the OM say, "Time of the month?" Numbers Guy chimed in, "Oh, with the age on that." In the toilet, I managed to get in the cubicle before the morning coffee came back up. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. My heart was pounding so loudly I thought I was going to have a heart attack in that cubicle. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. After pulling the flush, I left the cubicle and caught sight of myself in the mirror. My face was white with fear. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. I washed out my mouth and reapplied the lipstick that I kept in my pocket. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. I finally made my way into reception. I walked past Katrin, who muttered, "The state of it," referring to me. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. As I reached reception, Sarah was already at her desk and we said hello to each other. She asked what was wrong, which I avoided. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. Then the door opened and I saw a large case. At least he's not Robert Downey Jr. A man walked in wearing what looked like an expensive suit with such an air of confidence that it could only be him. But at least he's not Robert Downey Jr. And he wasn't. Except he was good looking and it kind of took my breath away. Now, before you go, Jess has turned into a stupid schoolgirl. It was not like that. I have never been like that, even when I was a stupid schoolgirl. I was a bit taken back, that was all. He was around my age, slightly older, younger than Robert Downey Jr., so it was all okay and totally age appropriate. It was just weird in that second. He said my name in a New York drawl that I have no intention of mimicking here. He apologised for not doing any handshaking and immediately went to the hand sanitizer that sat on top of the reception desk. I did the same and snapped into business mode. Told him the conference room had been set up and I would show him the way. Sarah looked at me as if to say, "What the fuck?" On the way, we exchanged pleasantries. The flight had been fine. He was staying in a hotel a few miles away and had hired a car. When we got into the conference room, I had a flashback of my anxiety dream and being forced to sit on a table surrounded by the baying crowd, and I nearly didn't walk in. He put the case on the table and started laying paperwork out in a methodical manner. It was all neat in different folders and envelopes, and I thought, I need to get me one of those PAs. I commented that it was a lot to take on the plane, and he told me he had it shipped over by courier to the hotel, which was pretty obvious and made me feel like a tool. Did I mention I was nervous? Then he placed a glasses case on the table, which I thought was odd, as he never worn glasses at any time in our Zoom meetings. He asked if I could organise refreshments and call the OM in. I went to leave and he asked, is the office phone working? Shit. I realised he wanted me to be in the meeting. Of course I did as I was told. I phoned Sarah to get the drinks and asked the OM to come to the conference room. He questioned it. Couldn't I come to his room? He was busy. I just calmly repeated my request and he huffed, said he would be quarter of an hour. So I repeated it again and he slammed down the phone on me. This was going well, I thought. He was there within a minute and his face crumbled when he saw who was in the room with me. I actually felt sorry for him. He sat down while Sarah brought in hot water for the facilities already in the room. She couldn't get out of there fast enough. The atmosphere was palpable. When non-Robert Downey Jr. got a herbal tea, he sat back down next to me, so we were both opposite the OM. If looks could have killed, then I would have been so far in the earth I'd be in fucking Australia. Non-Robert Downey Jr. then reached for the glasses case, put the glasses on and started the meeting. The OM was shown all the evidence of a theft going on right under his nose and he was quiet, incredibly quiet. We were in there for over an hour and at the end he looked at me and asked why I hadn't gone to him. I matched my tone, told him I didn't know if he was part of it. He hung his head down and almost whispered, I didn't know. And I believed him. The man who wasn't Robert Downey Jr., I'll give him a name soon, I promise. I am sick of saying Robert Downey Jr. I wish I picked Chris Pratt now. Anyway, the man who was an Iron Man requested the OM to give us 10 minutes before asking the extra security we'd hired to bring in the condemned man. I mean, he didn't phrase it like that. Something more professional. As he took his glasses off, he asked me if there was real coffee in the building, not instant. I didn't know. I was desperate to have a filter coffee maker in the office, but didn't want more fuel to the feud with Numbers Guy, who was a tea drinker. He asked if someone could go to Starbucks, that he would love a low-fat skinny latte, or anything that tastes like real coffee. I had to explain that the nearest Starbucks wasn't close. I think that was the moment it dawned on him that he was far from home. I offered him a small bottle of water from the mini fridge and he gratefully accepted. I took one for myself and asked if I needed to be in on this meeting. He told me I was essential. I don't think that was strictly true. The OM led Numbers Guy Plus into the office. Number Guy took one look at me and then fake Iron Man and was immediately on the defensive. He knew what was coming. He wasn't good at hiding his feelings like I was. Still, he wasn't going down without a fight. He pointed his huge index finger at me, looked at non-Robert Downey Jr. and stated, I hate to say this, but she has been trouble from day one. She's paranoid and everyone here hates her. Non-Robert Downey Jr. didn't react. He just calmly put on his glasses and remarked, what is it? Is she paranoid or does everyone hate her? I wanted to do a little fist pump in the air. Numbers Guy dropped his finger and resigned to what was coming. 3 hours later, and it was decided that non-Robert Downey Jr. would sit in my office in the space where Numbers Guy vacated. When he walked in for the first time, I could see he wasn't impressed. I moved all the papers that was on the desk over to the shelf, and he just stared at it. He saw there was a roll of kitchen towel behind my desk, which he picked up. Then, seeing the large hand sanitizer I kept at the edge of my desk, he pumped it a few times and then wiped the chair. This is why, from here on out, the man who is not Robert Downey Jr. will be called Niles, after Frasier's obsessively clean brother in the TV sitcom. I realised I was staring and severely reprimanded myself. I didn't know if it was just dirty or the man had OCD. I don't think he was happy, but said something like he was going back to the conference room for a meeting with the OM. I phoned our cleaners and asked if they could do a deep clean immediately, and for a stupid sum of money, they eagerly obliged. Within 10 minutes, they were there, so I vacated the office, and as it was nearly lunchtime and I was desperate for a break, I decided to get in my car and drive to the nearest Starbucks. It was a 10-minute drive, and with the cost of fuel, probably cost me £100. When I got back, the shit had hit the fan. Sarah accosted me straight away, asking what was going on. I gave her the strawberry frappuccino I bought her and told her whatever she thought was right. She wasn't stupid. She had watched colleagues being taken out by security. There's usually only one reason that happened. The cleaners were just finishing as I got into the office, and I realised I'd never seen that office clean. What had I been putting up with? I put Niles's low-fat skinny latte on his desk and a couple of options for lunch. I was assuming he hadn't thought of that. Luckily, he was only a few moments behind me, and I could see he was stunned by the difference, although he never mentioned it. I pointed to the food and drink on his desk. He looked at me strangely, definitely trying to work me out. And I bet I didn't take his breath away either. That night I got home and was finally allowed to feel it all. A 30-minute shower or hundreds of tears didn't manage to wash away the guilt. 4 colleagues had lost their jobs. Numbers guy, the transport supervisor, and 2 people from the factory floor, all because of my actions. And I had to sit and watch it happen. All I wanted to do was close the curtains, get into bed, and stay there for a month. But I couldn't. It was only Monday. Irish comedian Spike Milligan said, "Money can't buy you happiness, but it does bring you a more pleasant form of misery. Like not having to go into work the next day." I did have an early night, but I was up again at 3 a.m. playing every part of the day before. I don't wake up worrying. It's just when I wake up, everything starts flooding back. I have a sneaky suspicion that I have anxiety dreams all the time, and I just don't remember them. It would explain why I can't sleep through the night in any circumstances. When I exhausted yesterday, I started playing Special Moments in the Life of Jessica J. Garner and gave up on sleep completely. At 4 a.m, I got my laptop out and started to write. As luck would have it, my main character is going through a particularly rough time, so I indulged in some transference and gave myself a break. At 7 a.m, I was going to work via Starbucks. I left a coffee for Sarah on reception and headed into the office with 2 coffees in hand. Niles came in and asked if I was okay after yesterday, and I said something like it wasn't the best day of my professional life. I changed the subject quickly about his evening, and he waxed lyrical that he could watch The Office on UK Netflix. I don't know why I felt stupidly happy to hear that. So what if he's got taste? Before work on the floor began, a general meeting was held where Niles explained that the 4 people gone had broken company rules, they would not be allowed back in the building, and we were not allowed to engage with them. As he talked, I could see people looking at me as if it was my fault. Especially my so-called nemesis, Catherine. There's that expression now about living rent-free in someone's head. I had a feeling that's what was happening here. Catherine had built me up to be some kind of evil troll. I was plotting the downfall of her and her friends. In truth, I rarely gave her a second thought. When she was being spiteful towards me, of course it hurt in that second, but that was it. It's not like she could really actually hurt me. Now I know I was wrong about that too. I got the word later that apparently the colleagues who were fired had done nothing wrong and I had set them up. The OM explained it in a meeting between him, Niles and me. I don't even know why the OM would bring it up. Niles expressed his concern about the toxic culture in the organisation and turned to me as if it was my doing. No way was I going to take the blame for that problem. It was happening long before I started here. I calmly explained that when I began in this location in February, I started to notice discrepancies, so the easiest way for it to go away was to drive me away. It was an effective plan, and they were so persuasive that people who would normally believe such things did. I pointedly looked at the OM, who had the humility to hang his head in shame. Of course, I was talking shit too. Maybe they don't like me because of me. Niles changed the subject and asked what our plans were to increase turnover. I told him a couple of ideas I had, but the OM was blindsided. Of course he was. I knew Niles was coming over. The OM didn't. It was decided I would work with Niles on increasing turnover and OM would work on hiring and everyday operations. I have a spot in work. I would imagine others know about it, but I am lucky enough to be able to slip away at any time of the day when I need 5 minutes. It's right at the back of the building. It's shaded on a warm day and there are luscious green fields and mountains as far as the eye can see. Wales at its best. I don't take advantage, I always make up the time, and on some bad days I've sat on the ground and had my sandwiches there out of the way. Others tend to go to the side of the building where there are a few benches and it's sunny. I prefer the shade. After the meeting I went to my spot, but the nausea didn't subside. I was angry with the OM, but I still felt sorry for him. I was angry with Numbers Guy and Co. for putting me in this position. I was angry with myself for bringing this on myself, and I was angry with Niles the most for coming here and disrupting everything. It was expected I would go into the office until Niles left the country. I was hoping that would be soon because I was exhausted. On Wednesday morning, I did my trip to work via Starbucks. I got 3 coffees. I don't know why I suddenly thought I had the cash to throw around on big American chains. Still, Sarah and Niles had their coffees that morning before starting work. I was the first in the office again and found myself watching the door for Niles to come in. I wondered if I was looking forward to seeing him. I reasoned with myself that his serious, quite brusque manner at times sometimes had been peppered with defence of me. So that had to be it. You know when you try to convince yourself of something, even though when he finally came in, I felt my stomach drop? I casually dropped into the conversation about keeping him away from his family, and he said he had a daughter but was divorced from her mother, so he didn't live with her. He was living with a partner now, though. And that was it, then. He had a significant other. Of course he did. Niles would soon be back home with her, him, or them quite soon. He asked the same of me and I told him I was single without children. I was waiting for a comment about being childless, but it never came. 10 points to Niles before I realised there was no point system. I've managed to get a last minute meeting with a local businessman who was looking to place business in the food industry. Yes, I'm being deliberately vague. I knew him because he was planning to place business with a Cardiff base a couple of years earlier, but it had fallen through. He was well known in the area for being a name dropper. You know the type. I was chatting about this with Richard Branson. Clang. My friend Sir Alan Sugar gets a bad rep about this. Clang. In the Cardiff office, we used to play Clang Bingo. Whoever managed to get the most names he would drop would win an imaginary prize. The OM was in my office when Sarah came in with a list of names for the meeting that morning. She explained to him what we were doing when the OM said he wanted in on it. That was the first time there was an actual fun conversation that included me in that office, and I was expecting Niles to shut it down at any moment, but he didn't. Just continued with his work. The meeting was as dull and as entertaining as I thought. I explained what we could offer. Niles put his side across, and I got to see the very persuasive sales part of him. At the end of the pitch, I was awaiting the long, drawn-out, tenuous and name-laden pitch from his side, and I wasn't disappointed. We were in a fairly large conference room, so he couldn't see me ticking off names on the bingo list, and I was winning. I mean, it was getting silly, the amount of names. Like Niles had any clue who Mark Drakeford was. He's the FM of Wales, by the way. I was getting too comfortable in my confidence of what I predicted, so I didn't see the next part coming. Niles leant over, took the pen from my hand, and wrote POTUS in large letters on my notepad and put the pen back in my hand. I couldn't even look at him. Within minutes, the name clanger mentioned Biden and I gave a half a second glance to Niles, as he did to me. There was a smile on his face for a nano of a second, and I knew I was in deep trouble. This is going to sound weird, but when I dug a little deeper about psychopaths, I was a little jealous of them. To live in the world not having feelings actually sounds really lovely. I don't mean I want to kill other people. From what I understand, not being an expert, is that most psychopaths don't do that. They just manage to get to the top of their fields by not worrying about others. I remember being told that meant you didn't feel the good stuff, like happiness, but that would be okay because I don't feel that much anyway. Most of the time, what I end up doing is shutting feelings down. Bear this in mind because this is where I was in that moment. Having to shut something down, which made me slightly reckless and act out of character. When the businessman ran out of names, he started a negotiation. I knew he was hungry because he'd just been let down and it was a good fit. However, a good business person does not take the first offer. If they're rejecting third and fourth offers though, especially when they're good, then they're actually taking the piss. When he rejected another round of negotiations and came back with some ridiculous offer that wasn't worth our time, I stood up and said, "I've come here in good faith. The director of a multinational company has come here in good faith, and I'm sorry, but the only person that gets to fuck with me is my partner." Niles rose next to me. The business person stared hard at me for a moment, and I matched his stare. I thought I'd blown it, so I went to pick up my bag, and he burst out laughing. "Now you are the person I want to do business with." And I sat back down. As we left the office, Niles repeated back to me, "The only person that gets to fuck with me is my partner." I was waiting for the reprimand. Instead, he was smiling. "That was fucking good," he said. I was ridiculously pleased that he was pleased with me, but that couldn't happen because, well, you know why. I needed to do something that made me not like him. And that was really fortunate because he did two things that day. The first one was a stupid one. After lunch, he stormed into the office and said the floor supervisor was dating Catherine, which wasn't exactly news to me. He said it was totally unacceptable. I genuinely couldn't see the harm. As far as I'm aware, neither of them brought that into the workplace, and whatever they did out of work wasn't our business. Apparently, though, we had all signed contracts after the takeover stating we would not engage in workplace relationships with supervisors. I checked my contract and I had indeed signed that, thinking that would be the least of my problems. I tried to reason with Niles that while it might be a good rule in corporate America, this was Wales. Most of the people here lived in the same place, where practically everyone knew each other. Generations of family knew each other. There was no stopping familiarity in the workplace. He didn't agree, so he went straight to the OM to speak to him. He lost 10 points for being a jerk, but that was okay, because there was no point system. The second, though, was far more serious and came in the form of an email from New York. It was about the factory income, but he and Niles had asked his colleague to copy in the OM and me into an email with the figures. Instead of the colleague creating a new email, he had just forwarded the original conversation and tagged us in it. In the original email conversation, which I skim read the second it arrived, Niles said the loss was too great and he was shutting down the factory. I know I didn't show a reaction, but there was a huge one inside. I quickly printed the email into a PDF and saved it on my laptop. Just in time too, because within 10 seconds it had been recalled and disappeared from my inbox. I went to my spot, saw the rolling hills and took a deep breath. This was a good thing, really. It meant me leaving this stupid place with its stupid people and never have to think about it all again. Okay, that was naive. Of course I'd think about it. Remember that time I stopped the theft from the company but got shut down instead and 70-odd people lost their jobs? I was a fucking stupid idiot. I had a choice, though, and I decided to go down fighting. I went back into the office and told Niles I'd read the email. He half apologised, said I wasn't meant to. I asked him what it was going to take. It was a stupidly small amount of money. I mean, it was a lot of money. I couldn't hand it over and say, "There it is." Even if I sold my house and my kidney, I couldn't do it. In the grand scheme of things, though, it wasn't insurmountable. The place could be saved, at least short term. I think Niles expected me to walk away from it, accept my fate. Instead, I asked him if he would help. I had no idea when he was going back to the States. He hadn't been that forthcoming, and I guess from what he was saying, it was the weekend. I couldn't read him. I didn't know whether he saw me as a huge joke or thought I might have a chance of saving the place. I didn't know myself if I was capable of it. All I knew was I wasn't capable of it on my own. He agreed that if we could raise that money, it would be a buffer for 2 years. 2 years would be plenty of time for them to get more funding and investment and for me to find a new job. I could fight to get 2 years. I spent another sleepless night, but this time thinking of ways to save the business. When I arrived at work on Thursday, by Starbucks again, I was second in. Niles was sat at the desk working and managed to have his coffee a little warmer than usual. He said maybe buying Starbucks wasn't the way to save the company, and I realised he thought I was putting this on the company account. I didn't get to correct him because the OM came into the office and said good morning. Sarah came into the office a while later and insisted on giving me money towards the coffees. Told her not to be so silly, I was going anyway. Then we talked about our plans for the weekend, and I realised I had Samuel's birthday party on Saturday, which meant I had to speak to his mother, Ems. A little while later, I thought Niles had gone into a meeting with the OM and decided to go to my spot and finally speak to Em. She wasn't going to do it first. She had really upset me on that phone call where she called me selfish, but it had been nearly 2 weeks and so much had happened in that time. So much. Plus, maybe she was right. As I got to my spot, though, I could see a shape of a man there. Niles had taken my spot now. I turned around and went back into the building, promising myself I'd speak to Ems later. Comedian Paul Merton said, "My school days were the happiest days of my life," which should give you some indication of the misery I've endured over the past 25 years. Niles had a big conference call in the afternoon. I was building myself up to ring Ems, and I promised myself after I went to the toilet I would ring. After I finished, I was washing my hands. I heard the door open. I looked up and saw Katrin in the mirror. I moved to get a hand towel and tried to ignore her. "You think you're so clever," I heard her say. That was the first time she directly said anything to me. Always about me. Always to other people in the vicinity, but never to me. I chose to ignore her and went towards the door, but I heard her shout, "Don't you dare!" And it genuinely chilled me. I had never been scared of Katrin before, but I remember thinking, just let her say what she needs to and move on. I spun around to look at her, gave her one of my deadliest stares. She was never getting the better of me. She started raving that I was trying to split her and her boyfriend up, saying they couldn't see each other just because I was jealous of her, because I was old and ugly and couldn't get a man and she wasn't and could. I'm paraphrasing here because it was far more disjointed and mean. In my head, I kept thinking, let her get it out and I'll go. Then she demanded to know why I'd done it. I had sacked 4 people already and now I was pushing her out. I told her I wasn't. I didn't tell anyone. I don't care who she sees. She told me I was pathetic and a big fat liar. I'd heard enough and turned to walk away, and that was my mistake. Turning my back on her. Because when she violently grabbed my arm to swing me back, I didn't see a fist until the moment it landed in my face. That's enough from me. Thank you so much for listening. It just leaves me to say, please come back. I'm not needy or anything, but do what you want. Also, a lot of this stuff is from the internet, and did you know the internet can lie? You can find me on Instagram at excusejess, and let's do this again soon.
Excuse the Jess was written and performed by Jackie J. Sarah. It is a Deliciously Bright production. If you enjoyed this, please click follow and give us a 5-star review or donate via Buy Me a Coffee. All details, including full credits, can be found on the website excusethejess.com.